most troubling aspect of the CBO report is that it underscored my biggest concern about the current draft of the House bill, which is that it does not do enough to drive down premiums. The bill as drafted would not pass the Senate. And I would point out that if it's not going to pass the Senate, it raises a good question of why House members would want to vote for this bill and pay the political price for voting for this bill if it is doomed to failure in the Senate.
Senator Ted Cruz, after digesting the CBO, weighing in, saying, I want to do something with Obamacare, but not this. However, he can go through it. They can amend it. Can't they change it? Depending on what it comes out of the House. Joining us now, South Carolina Senator Tim Scott. Senator Scott, welcome back.
Thank you, Brian. It's good to be back on the radio with you.
Yeah, same here. It was great spending a day with you over in Washington. This is a little bit easier. You don't have to deal with me in person.
Well, it's always a pleasure to deal with you, period.
Right. And just one thing was also clear is how much your colleagues respect you. And even though this is not necessarily your committee, is the committees in finance, banking, housing, and urban affairs, small business and entrepreneurship, health and education. This thing's going to be coming across your desk at some point. We believe it's going to get through the House. From what you see of what Paul Ryan's putting forward, can Senator Tim Scott get behind it?
It'll be difficult, without any question. I'm going to try to keep my powder dry as long as possible, but the reality of it is we are in a difficult position looking at the current construct of the legislation. We'll see what happens as it makes its way through the House. There are a number of senators, including myself, that would like to see some changes to it. But I think what we ought to start with is celebrating the fact that universally all Republicans, I believe, agree with the end of a mandate. To be compelled to purchase health insurance, I think, is on its final legs. That is a good thing. How we get to there, to that place, is an important conversation and one we're going to have for the next few weeks, it appears, because there's a lot of necessary conversations that are happening.
And, Senator, here's the thing. It's what you want and then what's possible. It's not Senator Tim Scott's Senate
exactly.
Or Ted Cruz's Senate. So there's a belief that you're not going to get 60 votes on anything, including the third phase of this plan. So you have a very practical survivalist speaker saying, okay, this is what I got to use. And it seems like everybody else, in many ways, at least according to the speaker, is thinking idealistically.
Well, I do think that there are some ideologues there, without any question, thinking about what is possible if we all wore red and not blue at all, and we had more than 51 reds in the Senate. But the fact of the matter is we don't, and therefore we have 50. I think we have 52. We need 51 of us. We can get there with the VP if we have a tie, get to 50. But that's the wrong approach. We have to start with a basic definition of what repeal looks like. Repeal looks like the end of the mandate. The second part of the conversation is how do we empower the states to have the flexibility necessary to drive down premiums. That can be done administratively to some extent, and then we can embed within the legislation a path to reducing the rates based on that flexibility that we give to the states. And then how do we transition from the current plan to something better and give people access to health coverage? That is a part of the glue that is that we're having a very difficult time
right.
getting through.
I mean, you're in this point. The way I understand, and you can correct me on this, the first phase we
sure.
saw, the second phase, Tom Price can't talk about it because it's against ethics rules. So if he's going to go in there and reverse 1,500 rules and add 1,000 rules, it's going to make Republicans feel better because most people are convinced he's got conservative credentials, as I'm sure you are. He can't
yeah.
mention it because it all is revolved around what you might invest, having heard what the White House is going to do. If you believe that, and if I'm correct there, the third phase is where you're going to need 60 votes, and that's being able to get tort reform. That's being able to go against get insurance across state lines so you're not stuck with just one choice like you are in South Carolina.
Yeah,
so,
Brian, those
go
are
ahead.
Good points, and I completely agree with the third tranche and allowing for competition across state lines. There's no doubt that we've seen in Texas that the medical tort reform lowers rates by up to 27%, I think it was, at the beginning of their miracle of tort reform, medical tort reform. I think we should do everything in our power to get something to the president's desk. The question was, will the current bill in its current form make it through? I think it's going to be difficult.
Yeah, I guess we'll find out shortly, because you have another committee on the House this week going to vote, and then you're going to go to the full floor, and it's going to be interesting to see what the Senate can do. And then we go through a normal legislative process and then see who's going to want to run on this, because no one wanted to run on Obamacare. They
right.
wanted to run from it. And we'll see who wants to do this. The other big story that just happened, because you're on the banking committee, it looks like interest rates are going up for the second time in 3 months. What does that mean to Senator Tim Scott?
Well, I think what it means to the country is that the retirees who are on fixed incomes, who depend on their retirement funds earning higher interest rates, will celebrate this. So our senior citizens who are have a fixed income will be happy. I think it may have a nominal impact on our economic growth. The truth of the matter is that there are two major levers that we have to pull in order to grow our economy. The first one is regulatory reform. That's why you've seen President Trump do a very good job of focusing much of the attention on our CRAs to reduce some of the regulations that are in the way. And the second is tax reform. You cannot be competitive in a global economy when you're at 35% and Ireland's at 12.5%. So we've got to become far more competitive. We don't have to be where they are, because our systems are the best in the world, but we have to be competitive. And so as Trump tackles those issues, we should be in the position or posture of supporting his position, because it will long-term grow our economy and perhaps even as high as 3.5 to 4%.
Well, yeah, but the problem is you can't get that done legislatively unless you get Obamacare ousted and reframed, and that's why everything's stuck.
Well, I think there's a couple ways to take a look at that, honestly. One way is to realize that reconciliation, the tool that we can use twice this year, one could be used for Obamacare, and hopefully that we'll get that accomplished, the second for tax reform. It changes the baselines in tax reform when you have Obamacare's taxes out of it before you start the conversation. But the reality of it is, if you don't get it all done from a budget-neutral position in the 10-year window, then you can still get it done using reconciliation. It just expires as the Bush tax cuts did in 01 and 03. Those taxes back those days. So what we need to do is make sure that we work on behalf of growing our economy and have confidence in whatever we get passed, whether it is budget neutral or not, makes our economy grow faster. And if that happens, people will be very in tune and very willing to give it another 10 years.
Yeah, I guess so. We're talking with Senator Tim Scott about what's going on with tax cuts, what's going on with Obamacare. The other big story that happened this morning, which is that Devin Nunes or the ranking member, Adam Schiff, was unable to find any proof or evidence that Barack Obama, tacked the lines or surveilled the lines or tap the lines of President-elect Donald Trump or the nominee Donald Trump. What is the president? Where do you think this goes from here?
Well, I think it's certainly important if there's any evidence that the Trump administration can uncover themselves, and they have a tremendous bandwidth in this area to uncover any issues. They should present it to the public. It's that simple. Nunes, his statement earlier today was clear as a bell. They have not found anything that indicates wiretapping at all, which is a very clear statement.
Yeah, in fact, here's how it sounded.
We don't have any evidence that took place. And in fact, I don't believe, just in the last week of time, the people we've talked to, I don't think there was an actual tap of Trump Tower. If we have to, we will subpoena all information that is pertinent to this investigation if people either, number one, don't want to appear, or if the appropriate agencies do not provide the information that we've asked for.
That was him this morning. So it's it's a Republican coming out there saying we haven't seen anything yet, and Democrats are dumping all over this. I think clearly it's a tweet that I think the president would want back, wouldn't you?
I would want it back until I presented the evidence without any question. Here's what we do know. We work in an environment today where it is as toxic as it's ever been, particularly with the relationship between the media and the administration, and frankly with conservatives. So it's really important for us to try to keep the focus on what President Trump is inspiring or aspiring to do for the American people from a tax perspective, from helping those folks working paycheck to paycheck, looking at ways to eliminate Obamacare and replace it with something that's more logical, patient-centric, and private sector-driven. So the president's proposals and objectives are in the best interest of the American people. What we need to do is to get that accomplished. Anything that distracts from that is going to slow down our ability to get his priorities done, and that's why I think it's so important to produce the evidence and or for us to move on quickly so as to take care of the American people based on the private sector principles that have driven us to have the best economy in the world.
Yeah, I mean, to move past this, I think that a lot of Democrats are feasting on it. A lot of Republicans want to move on for it. And we'll see what happens, because James Comey's going to come to Capitol Hill. He's going to testify on Monday. Do you believe there's an investigation ongoing with the FBI as it relates to the Trump campaign and Russia?
I can't comment on that because I have no way of knowing what the FBI is doing. I will say that we have great confidence in our national security leaders, and I know that there's been a kerfuffle, so to speak, around their involvement and engagement. We should, A, put the American people first, B, put their priorities where they are our central focus, and C, work our way through these challenges that have presented themselves.
So how do you assess Donald Trump's first 55 days, 57 days?
I think the Democrats have done a fabulous job of trying to slow down the system so that he doesn't have the personnel necessary to carry out the priorities that got him elected. So I think Donald Trump has done a pretty good job of keeping the focus on his priorities, though I will concede that there have been times when the administration and the media have had spats that have slowed down the system. Ultimately, there's no doubt that the American people selected and elected President Trump because his priorities are their priorities. And if we can get those things accomplished, the average person in the average place in this country will be better off.
You know, I talked to Lindsey Graham, and he said, well, I spoke to President Trump a couple of days ago, and then last night again. Then I talked to here Elijah Cummings. I talked to him 3 times in 2 days. Rand Paul, he talks to him 3 times a week. He seems to be reaching out to Capitol Hill. Have you guys spoken?
We have. We have been together on an occasion about 3 weeks ago. The key for me is, as he said, you know, if there's something you need, please let me know. My phone's always available. My door's always open. I don't feel the need to go there. I think his priorities and my priorities are aligned as it relates to the priorities of the American people. So my objective is to get it done, and I hope he continues to reach out to those folks who may be impediments to his agenda and or maybe allies that he needs to bring into the fold a little bit more.
Yeah, we're speaking to Senator Tim Scott. Senator Scott, I know race relations mean a lot to you, and school choice is something you support. There's a huge pushback of Betsy DeVos's. That's her initiative. Where do you stand? What would that do for the people of South Carolina?
Listen, as a kid raised in a single-parent household, mired in poverty, disillusioned about the American dream, the notion of a strong, powerful education system that produces results is, in my opinion, the most important issue we have of the day for those folks in vulnerable financial situations. I respect and appreciate Betsy DeVos's push towards making sure that every child in every zip code has quality educational choices, be it public schools, charter schools, or private schools. I'm going to continue to work with her to make sure that the kids around this country experiences the probability, a high probability of the American dream. And I say that purposefully. I don't know that we can guarantee the American dream, but we can guarantee that your opportunity to experience the American dream is significantly higher with a quality education. That is why I say that education is the closest thing to magic in America, and I thank God that Betsy DeVos is leading us in the right direction.
And it just seems like a union situation why other people don't see it that way. And
exactly.
I watched the lottery situation in New York City where people actually act like they won the lottery when they find out they get a chance to send their kid to a school that's going to be put them in class from 9 a.m. to 6 at night and bury them in homework because they understand what happens. And I just think that would go a long way. It's amazing how that issue got turned on its head, you know, because now Democrats feel as though when they back public schools, they're helping out the black community. And somehow I think that America's been conned into believing that.
And it is absolutely not true. Bottom line is antithetical to the truth. The reality of it is simply this, that the Betsy DeVos's West Aviation High School in Michigan was the, according to some, the NISH rating agency, the number one performing charter public school in the state of Michigan, according to U.S. News and World Report, number five school in performance as a charter school, top 15% of all high schools in Michigan. The reality of it is we've got someone who has a fresh set of eyes looking at a system that must be reformed if we are going to help the lowest performing student and the most vulnerable financially. That is a golden opportunity for this country, and I thank God that we as conservatives are championing a cause that is so important to our future.
And lastly, I no doubt about it, Steve Harvey got huge backlash when he went to visit the president, which is really sad. He didn't say, I'm voting for him. He just wanted to work with him. And then we saw what happened with Under Armour, and a lot of their African-American athletes wanted to maybe jump ship because Kevin Plank wants to work with the president in his on his enterprising small business council. And then we have somebody like Snoop Dogg has a fake shooting of a clown Donald Trump in his video. Well, what is going on with the black community and how they perceive Donald Trump?
Well, I think it's not just the black community. I think it's the liberal community, the African American community that includes liberals within the African American community. I think it's the Hispanic community. I think as our nation is in upheaval on one or two sides. You're either for the president or you're against the president, and that's just the reality that we face now. It's never been. The lines have never been more stark, the contrast never more clear. The reality of it is we have an opportunity with all three levers of government in our hands to prove to people that we are focusing on making the future better for every American and not play identity politics. And that's something I've done my best to avoid, but I'm willing to stand up and have a conversation about race and politics whenever necessary.
Absolutely. And lastly, just to build on that real quick, can you imagine if a white rapper ever put a gun to a actor playing Barack Obama in a music video? What would be the difference between that and the way Snoop Dogg was able to do that to this president?
Yeah, that's a good question. I don't know the answer. I think it would not be positive. I will say that what I try to do is be clear in my position on the hyperbolic approach that too many people take and take for granted that their criticism of the president doesn't encourage others to be more vocal. I would say that we should all exercise our right and our First Amendment rights to free speech, but we should be very careful when we're drawing outside the lines and encouraging others to do the same in a more aggressive fashion.
Senator Tim Scott, I love having you on. Thanks so much. I hope to talk to you again soon. It's an exciting time to be a U.S. Senator, and you're always making a difference. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks, Brian.